This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. North Carolina lawmakers say they need more time to reconcile differences about the state budget. They passed another continuing resolution yesterday that funds the government through September 18th, third time they've had to create a stopgap spending measure since the fiscal year started nearly 2 months ago. And in Washington, Republican Congressman Mark Meadows of North Carolina has again hinted at requesting a vote to remove House Speaker John Boehner from his position. Political junkie Ken Rudin is back to talk about the latest in North Carolina politics. Welcome back, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.
Let's talk about this budget battle. I mean, it's probably not uncommon in states where the legislature is divided. One chamber controls, the Democrats control one chamber, Republicans the other. But here you have the state in complete control of Republicans, and they can't get a budget passed. Is this unusual?
Well, to me it is. I mean, it does remind me, though, of what we saw with the Republicans in 1995 in Washington. And I think one of the reasons Bill Clinton was reelected is because of the Republican House and the Republican Senate were battling each other. And that's what's going on with North Carolina, especially as the gubernatorial election is around the corner. I just saw a poll, and I'm sure you saw the same poll, a PPP survey in North Carolina. 15% of the people approve of the job the legislature is doing, 60% disapprove. And this has nothing to do with Democrats. Democrats don't even have a say in what's going on here. This is all Republicans.
All Republicans. You talked about the gubernatorial race. One Republican we haven't heard much from at all in this budget debate is the chief executive. Governor McCrory is nearly silent in this whole debate. Is there anything to be said about sort of the governor of the state, the chief executive, not weighing in on how the budget should turn out?
Well, I mean, look, I mean, obviously the Senate, the House wants to spend more money. I mean, we're not talking about a lot of money here. We're talking about the House wants more money because they want to have a raise for state employees. They want more money for teacher pay. The Senate thinks that's going too far. And it seems like that every time Governor McCrory steps in and gets into a conflict with the Republican lawmakers in Raleigh, he gets his head handed to him. They criticize him. They accuse him of meddling. There's ideological fissures that emerge. So I kind of think that what he's doing is the right thing. I mean, it doesn't sound like there's major differences between the two, but the two sides seem to be so stuck on their. I mean, I'm not dismissing what they're saying, but when I saw that one lawmaker, I think it was a Democratic lawmaker, said, look, this is really embarrassing to the state. It's going on so long. And the Republican legislator replied by saying, oh, look, the schools opened on time. The teachers showed up. So what's the big deal?
Right.
So, with that kind of response, I think McCrory is very smart by hiding under the bed or wherever he is now.
Well, but of course, the big deal is that principals don't know how to staff their schools because they're waiting for a decision on whether or not we're going to fund teacher assistance. State agencies don't know how to proceed. Jobs remain open at the top, and they can't get replaced until I know what my budget is, plus the fact that it's costing us money to keep these guys in session to work it all out. And I'm just wondering if at some point down the line, it doesn't in the gubernatorial race become an issue. Where was the governor in all of this as the state was sort of kind of shrugging its shoulders at its responsibilities? Or does this not become a political issue? Someday we'll have a budget. It's all behind us. It's not part of the campaign.
It definitely becomes an issue. The issue, I think, Frank, you ask a good question. Either McCrory gets blamed because he was nowhere to be found. He was MIA during these negotiations. Or voters can say, look, the Republicans can't get their act together. We've given them a tremendous opportunity since 2010. They're kind of botching everything. And maybe there's no difference between the legislature and McCrory because they both have R's next to their name.
What about the Democrats? They've been...
Wait, who?
Exactly. And yet you would think that this might be an issue. And except for the floor of the House and the Senate, where they've raised objections and criticisms about how long it's taking, there's been no real public display, no news conferences, no kind of public outcry on the part of the party to sort of make this an issue. What do you make of that?
Well, you know something, I was thinking that the other day, and I was thinking also, like, I'm thinking, why isn't Bernie Sanders attacking Hillary Clinton's ethics? Why isn't Martin O'Malley attacking Hillary Clinton's ethics? And I'm figuring there's no reason to, because every time you see a headline with Hillary Clinton, you see the words, you see the letters FBI next to her name. So they're probably thinking, why do I need to attack the Republicans because they're doing such a good job of bringing themselves down? I mean, that may be a short-sighted policy. That may not ultimately work for 2016. But right now, if you look at the numbers in the legislature, I think the Democrats staying away is probably just as smart.
Well, and you talked about the presidential race as well. In the presidential primary, there was a rumor going around about whether or not Donald Trump would be eligible to be on the North Carolina ballot in the primary. And this had to do with questions of a loyalty test of some kind. Talk about the rumor itself and, of course, how it was resolved.
Well, it's not so much a rumor because Republican Party, there is such a thing as a sore loser law that says that if you run in the state's primary, this usually doesn't have to do with presidential races, but if you run in the state's primary and lose, you're not allowed to then suddenly appear as a third party or independent candidate in November. And there are some Republican state parties who are just so upset about, one, what Donald Trump is saying about fellow Republicans, two, some of the outlandish things he's saying about women and Latinos and things like that. Remember, the lesson of 2012 was supposed to be, the Republican lesson was, like, we ignore the Latino vote at our own peril. Donald Trump is not ignoring the Latino vote. He's baiting them. He's saying, look, we got to round them up and send them home. I mean, this sounds frightening. I mean, short-sighted. So there are a lot of state parties that are trying to do whatever they can, or think they can do whatever they can, to try to either limit his ability to appear on their state ballot. But you know that with Donald Trump, all you have to do is say you're not going to be allowed to participate in our debates or appear in our ballot in the primary, and his numbers will quadruple. Well, we keep seeing that day in and day out. I've been covering politics for over 6 months. I've been for decades. I have never seen anything like this.
It's amazing, the staying power. But then think about the logic of keeping him off the ballot. They're not going to do it here in North Carolina. Republicans have said this is not it. But think about the logic. If the reason you want to keep him off is to keep him from running as a third-party candidate, you tell a billionaire that you can't be in the primary. That means the only option for him is a third-party run. And if you're a billionaire, as in the case of Ross Perot, why not?
Well, exactly. And besides, I mean, he makes up the rules as he goes along. And a lot of people say, well, you know, if only the media were able to point out his shortcomings. Every journalist I could speak of, and think of Megyn Kelly, think of the debate we saw 3 weeks ago on Fox. All they pointed out was the fact that all his heresies against Republican policies, all the money he's given to Democrats, or the fact that he calls women pigs and disgusting animals, things he says about Latinos. And the more we point that out, the more the media points it out, everybody says, yeah, I like this guy. He speaks the truth.
Well, I mean, white backlash has been an important element, and you have to say this, that for the Republican Party, starting with Jesse Helms back here in 72, white backlash has been an important element in the success of the Republican Party, not the only element.
Yes, there you go. But remember the famous Jesse Helms commercial against Harvey Gantt, where you had the black hand taking away the white hand, the job from the white hand?
Right.
Somehow that seems subtle. There's nothing subtle about Donald Trump. He's saying, send him home. Get rid of him. Go back to Univision. I mean, who says these things except for somebody who just has no concept of political reality, but maybe this is what political reality is.
Look at his numbers, Ken. You may have to adjust your sense of political reality after
exactly.
all of this. And God knows what the Latino press is saying about him because they don't get invited to his news conference. Let's move on to the Democratic side. Joe Biden, a candidacy that we thought was sort of way on the fringe of possibility, looking more likely these days?
I say he doesn't run, but I appreciate and I understand what he's going through. Apparently, you know, Bo Biden, his son who died of brain cancer a few months ago, both Bo and Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's other son, apparently talked to Joe and said, look, you know, you've been a great vice president. You've had a tremendous success. You really should try, think about going a third time for president. He ran in 1987. You know, we used to say that he wanted to be president in the worst way, and he showed it by the worst campaign in history. But, I mean, he ran in 87, got beaten, he didn't even make it to the primaries. In 2008, he got 1% in Iowa, and he was gone. And for the last 7 years, while he's been an effective vice president, he's also been known as, you know, the crazy Uncle Joe who gives women back rubs and says these weird things. But since the death of Beau, I think we our hearts have opened up to Joe Biden. We kind of want him to have the capstone of his career, that he's whatever he wants for himself. But what's the argument against, I mean, if you have Hillary Clinton, for all her faults, and Bernie Sanders in the race, what does Joe Biden bring to the contest? He has no staff. He has no money. There's 5 months to go before Iowa and New Hampshire. I don't think he's doing it, but I do know that he's making a lot of phone calls to donors, to longtime friends, to especially a lot of Democrats in South Carolina. And he's going to make a decision certainly by October 1st, the first Democratic debate, I think, is October 13th. He has to make a decision in advance of that. I don't think he does it, but as Hillary Clinton said, we should give him all the time that he needs, because he's obviously gone through a tremendous a bit of sadness over the last couple of months, and he deserves to make that decision in the privacy of his own family.
All right, Ken, always great to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank.
Ken Rudin is the political junkie. Just ahead, a preview of the National Folk Festival in Greensboro on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.